The day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. If it seems like pundits have been talking about the midterm elections for 100 years, take note. They're actually less than 100 days away now. Here's Dave Cohen in New Orleans with the latest.
So now what happens? Do the Republicans hold on to the House and Senate if gas prices are still skyrocketing and the war isn't over? We decided to talk about that this morning with Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. So this wasn't the plan, was it? The president really hoped that he'd have the war with Iran over, all of the treaties and deals signed, and gas prices coming down so that by the time voters went to the polls in about 100 days to cast their ballots in the midterm elections, they'd be feeling really good about his administration and Republicans, right?
And well, as the saying is goes, hope is not a plan. So here we are.
So what does this mean right now for the Republicans and their chances of holding on to the House and Senate in the midterms?
So remember that the basic underlying dynamic in a midterm election is that the party that holds the White House almost always loses seats. So we call this a surge in decline. So there are very few exceptions to this. In, for example, 2002, the Republicans actually picked up some seats, but George W. Bush's approval rating was still really high after 9/11. There was 1998 when the Republicans impeached President Clinton. It was a very unpopular impeachment, and then the Republicans ousted Newt Gingrich as Speaker because that went very wrong for them. But this is a pretty strong pattern in history. So going into this election, things were already not looking good for the Republicans. And if you look at the House of Representatives right now, it is a very narrow majority for the Republicans, which means that the odds of the House flipping to the Democrats going into this, the odds are really high that the House flips to the Democrats. The Senate is much closer. The Senate is much harder to predict. So remember that you have 100 seats in the Senate. And in any given year, only a third of the Senate is up for grabs. So the Senate is much harder to predict. We don't really know what's going to happen with the Senate, but the odds that the House flip are really high.
So, Professor Buechler, tell me this: what, if anything, can the president, the Republicans, do to alter history, as it were, and be one of the very few examples of when a midterm election goes the way of the party controlling the White House?
Honestly, not much. I mean, one of the fallacies is the idea that these kinds of things are in the control of the president. So, for example, in 2002, the reason that the Republicans picked up some seats was that George W. Bush's approval rating was extraordinarily high, but that was a function of the aftermath of September 11th. So,
and President Trump's not enjoying an extraordinarily high approval rating.
No, he is really not. He has a very low approval rating. And the reason that President Bush's approval rating was that high was a rally around the flag effect from the worst terrorist attack in the history of the country, which was not his doing. So that's not the kind of thing that's in the president's control. Similarly, when the Democrats bucked the trend in 1998, the Republicans impeached him for something that most of the country did not consider impeachable. So that was not in his control. That was the public's reaction to the other party doing something that the country didn't approve of. So that was not in his control either. So if you look at those two examples, they're not things that were in the president's control. So if you ask, is there something that President Trump can do, not based on historical precedent. These are not the kinds of things that are in the president's control. Now, if you ask, are there things that he might have done to mitigate the damage? Yes, because the Republicans are in a worse position than they might have been historically, given his low approval ratings. And his low approval ratings are at least to some degree a function of his own actions, his own choices, and to a large degree, his personality. But his personality is kind of baked in. He has a core of support that absolutely love him. A lot of the country doesn't like him. There are some things going on in the country that the country doesn't approve of. But that's just baked in at this point.
Why is it that historically, and you've studied this far more than many, why is it that historically the party in control of the White House loses seats in the House and Senate 2 years after they win the White House? What is it about the American electorate that almost always does that?
There are a lot of things going on there, and it's hard to attribute it to just one thing. So one of the things that happens is that the president's party will tend to pick up seats in the presidential election year. So that's kind of what we will call a coattail effect. And that means that in a presidential election year, the president's party will get more seats than they would normally win, and then they will tend to lose some of those seats in the next election because they're holding more seats than in some sense they would naturally hold. So it's sort of a correction effect. Then you get a public backlash to the president because frequently what will happen is the president's party will overshoot on policy and you get a kind of a pendulum effect of public opinion swinging in the other direction. So there are a couple of factors. You will also frequently have some individual factors going on with elections. So, for example, members of the president's party will sometimes get a little nervous. They will have some strategic retirements. The off party will sort of organize a little bit more effectively. So there are a lot of factors going on at once, and it's hard to attribute it to any one particular factor because there's so many factors in play.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though, we call it political science, and there is clearly a lot of science to it, and you have just demonstrated that. A lot of people see it as political chaos most of the time, but there are trends, there are identifiable factors that do influence the electorate, and clearly those are several. What do you think this tells us, though, about the next presidential election? Because once we get through these midterms, then everyone's talking about, all right, who's going to be the next president? The Democrats really haven't had anybody emerge as a strong candidate. And the Republicans, while there are some people in the talk, not clear yet who will try to succeed President Trump. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's really hard to predict. So the general direction is the parties are moving to the extreme. We can see very clearly the Democrats are moving way to the extreme. The Republican Party sort of has a battle going on between a sort of a nativist faction and more of a kind of an old-fashioned capitalist faction. And it's hard to see which direction the party goes. We know which direction Vance wants to go, and he's sort of trying to fight off the old-fashioned capitalist faction.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. It will be finally an election without an incumbent and without an obvious frontrunner. That sounds like it'll be a lot of fun.
Let's zero in on some of those candidates, both Republican in California and Democratic in Philadelphia, who hope to take advantage of the natural swing in a midterm. Here's Phil Matier in San Francisco.
The Republican candidate for governor, Steve Hilton, knows that if he is going to have any chance of winning in November, he will have to reach out across the aisle to Californians who do not support Donald Trump. Phil, good morning. So what would Steve Hilton's strategy be?
Well, according to Joe Garofoli at the San Francisco Chronicle, Hilton, the Republican candidate for governor, is taking out full-page ads in the Chronicle and the Los Angeles Times, asking readers, you know, can you be anti-Trump and still vote for me? Now, what the ad includes is what Hilton is billing as a test for voters to determine whether Trump haters can find, you know, room for agreement with Hilton. And he has statements like, you know, I can't stand Trump, but I'm not happy with the way things have been run in California lately. Or another one is, I'm all for solar power, but I can barely afford my electric bill.
Steve Hilton was endorsed by Donald Trump for the primary, and he embraced it, and he made it to November. What about moving forward now into November? Will he shy away from that?
Well, he's not going to shy away from it on the Republican side, and I don't think he's going to shy away from it. I don't necessarily need he's going to highlight it. Hilton is a political operative, former Fox News commentator, and he worked even in his native England as a strategist for Prime Minister Dave Cameron.
Here's KYW in Philly on presidential contenders. Could Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro return to a national ticket?
Governor Shapiro has some work to do to convince people in the first in the nation presidential primary state that he should be in the White House. A new poll of Democratic voters in New Hampshire has him tied for seventh among other prospective candidates. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez leads the survey, followed by former Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and Arizona Senator Mark Kelly. Republican voters favor Vice President J.D. Vance, but this University of New Hampshire survey finds Secretary of State Marco Rubio closing the gap significantly over the last 5 months.